Welcome to You Can't Make This Up, a companion podcast from Netflix. I'm Ray Vada, and I am hosting this week's episode. Here on You Can't Make This Up, we go behind the scenes of Netflix original true crime stories with special guests. This month, we're revisiting the iconic documentary, The Staircase. After airing in France in 2004, the original documentary series had not one, but two follow-ups. And last year, together for the first time, Netflix released all 13 episodes. The Staircase follows the trials of Michael Peterson, a novelist in Durham, North Carolina, who's accused of murdering his wife, Kathleen. And French director Jean-Xavier de Lestrade has been there every step of the way, filming Michael Peterson, his family, and his defense team for over 15 years. We wanted to revisit The Staircase 1 year later and talk to the director about what the documentary has meant to him over the years and what he thinks about the growing trend of true crime that he helped pioneer. We brought in self-proclaimed Staircase mega fan and host of the long-form podcast, Aaron Lammer, to interview Jean-Xavier.
So the first movie of yours that was distributed in America is Murder on a Sunday Morning, but I know from your Wikipedia page that you had done stuff before then. How did the Michael Peterson story first come to you? How did you become aware of it?
Well, that's a long story, but I try to tell you in a short way. Murder on a Sunday Morning, in part produced by HBO, and HBO was very happy with Murder on a Sunday Morning, and they really wanted to do another movie. At the beginning, I said no, because it's so difficult to find a very good story. And because when we start, you never know what will happen. And we, in a way, we were a little bit lucky with Murder on a Sunday Morning. And when you have to convoke the luck twice, it's becoming difficult. They put a pressure and say, okay, we really want another movie, and try at least to find a story. So we had a team, a kind of crew all around the States. What I said to them was very simple, because Murder on a Sunday Morning was the case about a young American-African teenager who have been accused of having killed a woman. I wanted to find a case who would be the opposite of Murder on a Sunday Morning. So I told the people that I wanted a case about a white guy, wealthy, known in his own community, a man who was able to pay private defense lawyer. That was mainly the starting point. And it took, we have reviewed at least 400 different cases. And suddenly, in January 2002, a journalist from North Carolina sent us a mail in Paris, and the mail was very simple, two lines. I have a case, a novelist, Michael Peterson, is accused of having killed his wife, is well known, and his lawyer is David Rudolph, who is a very good lawyer. He's saying it's an accident. And so, well, interesting. We took a flight and we went to meet David Rudolph first. And the day after David Rudolph, we met with Michael Peterson. First of all, David Rudolph seems to be a very good character, very good lawyer, smart, and very open. And that was a good start. So the day after, we met with Michael Peterson, and Michael Peterson appeared to be also a very good character. Not so charming than David Rudolph, but you could immediately feel that there was like a mystery around this guy, something you couldn't catch immediately. There was a strong intuition I had that there was like ghost in the room. when you were with him. And at some point, you have to trust your intuition or your deep feeling. And I said, okay, we are going to start to shoot. So we start shooting, and I thought that in 6 months, that the shooting of the documentary would have been finished. But we stay 22 months.
You seem to gravitate towards lawyers as the subject of your movie. I mean, you could even say that The Staircase is equally about David Rudolph as it is about Michael Peterson. What fascinates you about lawyers, and why are they good subjects for films?
Well, in fact, I have a law degree. I studied law during 4 years in college, and that was only after having that law degree that I did journalism studies. But I have always been very focused or interested in justice system, because I think maybe the justice system is one of the best way to look into a democracy, how that democracy is working or not working. So I try to do it in France, but in France it's very, very difficult to shoot inside a courtroom, to follow lawyers. And so I went to the States. You can say that United States are the biggest democracy in the world. And just to, how can I say that? To challenge that title, in a way, I wanted to look at it through the justice system, how it works, and is it fair or not.
What were your impressions when you first set foot in an American courtroom? What were the biggest surprises for you as you started to spend time around the American justice system?
The biggest surprise, and that the biggest difference between a courtroom in Europe, or especially in France or Italy or Spain, than in a courtroom in the US. In France, you get the sense that in a courtroom, the judge is there to try to find the truth, in a way. And it's not, of course, always easy. When you go in a U.S. courtroom, you immediately get the sense that it's not really about truth. It's more about a story against another story. It's more about storytelling, in fact. And that's why it's so great for filmmakers, because in one hand, you have the DA story, and especially in Michael Peterson's case, the DA was saying, okay, it's a murder, and the defense lawyer, David Rudolph, was saying, no, it's an accident, a fall down the stairs. Maybe the more compelling story, or the more believable story by the jury, will win, but at the end we don't know if it's a true truth or not, and it's controversial system.
For you personally, what made you make the switch from a law path to a journalism and then a documentary path?
When I was a child, I was dreaming that one day I will tell stories with a camera. But because my parents didn't really understand that desire, that I studied first law, but I always kept in mind that I wanted to do cinema, I wanted to do documentaries, I wanted to write dramas, and that was really my main desire. My deepest desire.
Did you have filmmakers whose work you were like, this is the kind of stuff I want to do? Because at the time, like this kind of long form documentary series, there weren't a ton of them out there. someone camping out in a courtroom for years filming. What were your inspirations as you launched a documentary career?
Well, in France, we have a very, very talented documentary filmmaker. His name is Raymond Depardon, and it's Cinéma Vérité. At some point, he tried to put his camera inside a courtroom. He did one or two films about the system, the justice system in France, and that was very inspiring. And in the US, you have Wiseman, and I have watched all Wiseman movies, and that was also very, very inspiring.
So at the front end of these 22 months, you're in Durham, North Carolina, very specific region of America. What did people make of a Frenchman with a camera crew pushing its way into the courtroom each morning, interviewing people in the community? How did people receive you?
That was very interesting because in 2002, 2003, that was the beginning of the Iraqi war. And if you remember at the time, the fries, when you were going to a restaurant, there was always French fries.
Freedom fries.
And, yes. And it became freedom fries because the French people were not there, were not with the Bush administration going to war against Iraq. And and so people were quite open, but they were looking at us in also in a way, not so friendly, but mainly it was a surprise. Why are you staying there? Why you have no life? And but the judge have been very very open to us and very nice because he allowed us really to shoot exactly like I had in mind, where I wanted to put the three cameras I wanted inside the courtroom. He allowed us to do that, and that was really a key factor in the way we shoot the trial, and that was very important.
This story has multiple giant twists in it. I think probably the biggest one for me was the revelation of this other woman who had died after falling down the stairs. I wonder if you could tell me emotionally for you when this project that, as you said, was supposed to be 6 months long, when a giant, giant twist comes in like that, that is going to totally change the trial and the story you're telling. How did that feel for you as the filmmaker? Are you excited? Are you dreading how much longer you're going to have to film?
Boss, exactly. Yeah. When we start shooting, obviously we had no clue about what will happen, and especially about the death of Elizabeth Radcliffe in Germany 17 years ago. We didn't know. In fact, we learn about that with the prosecution. Because at the beginning, my goal was to shoot. I didn't really wanted to do a documentary film about only about a defense system or the defense lawyers. I really wanted to look at the case, the way the justice system will treat Michael Peterson, and so try to shoot with the defense attorney crew, with Freda Black who is a very good character.
Once again, these things are so filthy, we can't even show them on TV. Filth, pure tea filth. This isn't people involved in a relationship. This is just any which way. This is called hardcore.
With Jim Hardin, the DA, and at the beginning, they allowed us to shoot and to work with them. At some point, because they really wanted us to know, to believe that Michael Peterson was guilty, they said to us, but you don't know about the death of Elizabeth Radcliffe. I said, but Elizabeth Radcliffe, who is that, the mom of Martha and Margaret? Yes, the mom of Martha and Margaret. Do you know how she died? No, I don't know, but I'm sure you are going to tell me and it will be interesting. And that's the way we learn. Obviously, they change all the perspective of the documentary. I knew at that point that I couldn't tell the story in 2 hours. I knew that we had to create a new format, to invent a new format, but not only a two-hour documentary.
What has it been like in the years since the original episodes came out, seeing, particularly in the last few years, this boom in true crime storytelling, which often takes the format that you pioneered with The Staircase, of the sort of multiple episode. Mm-hmm. There's something that you don't know at the beginning that's really going to change your views midway.
Well, to tell you the truth, when we came back to HBO at the end of the shooting and we told them, we can't do a two-hour documentary. It has to be a 8 hours documentary film. And at the time, Sheila Nevins was the head of documentary in HBO. And wow, she said, no way, no way, it's impossible. No, you have to tell the story in 2 hours. I'm sure you can do it. And I told her, yes, of course, you always can cut, but you can't imagine what we have shot. And we need to do it in 8 hours. That's the right format. And HBO said, no way. And so we have to withdraw from HBO to find other support. And that was a very risky path to say no to HBO.
And well, there weren't a lot of alternatives at the time either, I would
exactly
think. Like there weren't the 19
no,
different streaming
exactly,
services that you
exactly,
could go to.
Exactly. And that was quite difficult. And we put our own little production in risk. But I knew, I was totally convinced that there was only one way to tell that story, and we will convince many broadcasters all around the world to buy the 8 hours documentary, and to run it in that format, and thanks, I don't know who, but thanks, we succeed. Today it's more easier to find a place where to sell this kind of long-term documentary series. I'm quite happy to be able to watch Making a Murderer, to watch The Jinx, to watch The Keepers. Of course, the huge difference, because it's very difficult to do a good series, a good documentary series, because as I said, when you start filming, you don't know what will happen, and you never can be really sure that you will get all the material to do a 6 hours, 8 hours, or 10 hours documentary series. And if you take Making a Murderer, in fact, the two filmmakers, they start shooting during months and years before going to Netflix and saying, well, I think we had a very good show. and I know to shape a documentary series like a drama. That's, I think, it's good. It's very exciting. And when we start, when we cut Staircase, it was really, really exciting to do it as a drama. But we really had the material to do it and to stay really in the rules of a documentary film. Of course, you are not staging anything. You are shooting what it's in front of your camera. And that's very important. You always have to keep that in mind. It's cinema verite. And the beauty of the documentary, it's because you are capturing the life.
That sort of isolation and not wanting to affect the film that's happening in front of you must have gotten more difficult as you became more and more intimate with David Rudolph and Michael Peterson. I mean, these are people that you've now known for going on 15, 20 years now. How did making films, particularly as you came back to the film now that these people are a big part of your life, a big part of your career, were there additional challenges in feeling like, oh, I'm not staging this or I'm not influencing it simply by being here?
Yes, very good question. Because the main question about documentary is the point of view and the distance you keep between you, filmmaker, and the subject. And you have always to keep the right distance. And at the end, during the last 5 years of shooting, I have to say, with Michael Peterson, with David Rudolph, it has been more and more difficult to keep the right distance. Because, of course, as you said, we, in a way, we were friends, and it was really difficult to tell them, okay, you are seeing me as a friend, but I have also a film to do. And if I really want to shoot and to do a good film, I have to keep the right distance. And I can't be your friend. Or I may be your friend, but I have always to keep in mind that when I'm doing an interview of Michael Peterson, that guy who is in front of me may have killed his wife. And I don't know that, but I have always to keep that in my mind until the end, because that distance, as I said, is really, really, really important. And to stay at the right distance during 15 years, it has been quite difficult.
Did the fact that the case had become famous make it different when you return to film in the courtroom during Peterson's Alford plea? Like, I'm an American, and I was unaware of this case when it was happening the first time, different part of the country, never had heard of Michael Peterson's book. Now, because of the success of the original Staircase, this is a big case that people are interested in. The media is interested in it. It's a big deal, it seems like, for the local prosecutors in Durham. Like, this is their famous case. How did that change your filmmaking as you returned to the story?
Well, of course. And when we came back in December 2011, we were surprised because, in a way, now we were part of the story. We were not just watching the story, filming the story, but we were in the story too. That's why also Candace, Kathleen's sister, when at the last hearing, when she spoke about the film, about the documentary film, about us, about the way we supposedly have treated her. And of course, I kept that testimony in the film because that was important.
The next confrontation came from a French film company that wanted to make a pseudo-documentary about my sister's murder without my family's cooperation or consent. Michael Peterson would have a movie made that he could pontificate. He could tell everyone, all of you, how incompetent the Durham police and justice system was. He could proclaim in this film again his complete innocence.
How do you feel when, I'm assuming this happens, people approach you and want to discuss whether Michael Peterson is guilty or not, or want to discuss some of the theories that are popular on the internet? I think the owl theory has probably been the most viral. What's it like for you, not with a camera running, but just in your day-to-day life when people have seen The Staircase and want to talk about the guilt or innocence of its main character with the person who spent many years with him?
Maybe I have heard the question, what do you think? What do you really believe? What is your deep conviction about the case, about Michael Peterson? I've heard that question maybe 500 times. because of course, and I can understand. I spent 15 years and more than 15 years with Michael Peterson. Not, of course, every day, but in my mind, I spent 15 years with him. And during the first 8 years of the case, I don't remember a day where I didn't ask myself that question. Why do I know? Why do I feel? Why do I believe? And I became really obsessed by what happened that night. What happened to Kathleen Peterson? It's really a mystery, but I really want to understand. I really want to know. And I'm sure I will know what happened. But at the end, no, I don't know. And I have to live with that. And that's also the beauty of life, that sometimes there are still mysteries and you don't know. So I'm not sure that I know more today than I knew the first day I met him. Of course, we feel more comfortable if he is innocent. Because we spent so many hours, so many days, so many weeks together, and I never really got the feeling that he could have killed Kathleen. Because if it's a murder, it's really a barbaric murder. It's not just you push someone in the stairs. No, you beat someone until the death. But again, I was not there that night, and it's really difficult to know someone very well.
I think it's important for me to make the jury understand that this is not about whether we've proven Michael is innocent. It's not even about whether Michael is innocent. Scotland, they have a verdict that's either guilty or not proven. And here we say guilty or not guilty. Well, not guilty is not the same as innocent. And not guilty is really the equivalent of not proven, not proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
You described murder on a Sunday morning as getting lucky in a way, and or like lightning striking. And clearly, you got lucky again with The Staircase and getting a story that could extend over a decade. What are you doing now? Are you looking for another a third lightning strike, or
well, in fact, to tell you that really what happened, that after the end of the first 8 hours of that case in 2005, when I really said I finished the first eight hours of Stargaze. I am done with documentaries. I am done. I can't do it anymore because it's too stressful. It's been really difficult. And so I moved to drama. I wrote scripts and I shot different drama for the theater and the feature film and drama for television, but in the last 2 years, I said to myself, okay, maybe it's time to go back and to look at maybe another story, but not as a director, but maybe as a executive producer, and we try to find a story to do a documentary series. And we find a story in Boston. We start shooting 2 years ago. And nothing what we were expecting happened. Nothing at all.
For you, there's been the first 8 hours of The Stargaze, and then you did the first update, and now the final update in which Michael Peterson is now out of jail, which I would think means that was the last one, unless, I mean, never say never, I guess, with a story like this. But assuming that you are done with The Stargaze, mm-hmm. How is it to say goodbye to this? Is it still something you think about? Do you stay in touch with any of the people?
Yes. Yes, of course. I stay in contact with David Rudolph. I've seen him three times since last July, in fact, and I kept in touch with Michael Peterson. He's still living in Durham, in the same apartment. The last day of shooting, I knew that was the last day of shooting, and of course there was mixed feeling there. There was a feeling of relief. A huge relief, because I felt I was tied to the case. I was tied to these characters. I knew I had to do it. The fact that it was finished, it was a huge relief. But also there was kind of sadness too, because I didn't know. I knew maybe I will never see again Michael Peterson, other people, and that was a kind of really joyful and sad moment, of course, but again, huge relief.
And that's it for this week's episode. We'll be back next month with a new series or film for you to add to your watch list. You can find this show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review this show. That way, you can help other people find it. You Can't Make This Up is a production of Pineapple Street Media and Netflix. Our music is by Hansdale Sue. I'm Ray Vada, and thanks for listening.